further ado, Roger, I'll turn it over to you, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Council has been discussing with staff for some time to get a grasp on what the impact is of growth, especially when we look at growth in comparison to what are the expenditures related to growth, i.e., do we need more buildings, more vehicles, more equipment, more staff? And then what is the revenue that we'd be bringing in relationship to that growth? We've always guesstimated what would pay for that growth. I think about 3 years ago I told you a house of about $130,000 was typically the break-even point, and we knew that was increasing steadily as time went on. Now, just because I say that doesn't mean we don't continue to build affordable homes in the community. Again, we're looking at a measure or a sense of where is that point as far as growth versus expenditures and the revenue, and do we need to maybe in the future look at some other revenue sources to continue to meet the needs of our community. I had an opportunity, I want to say it was either late last year or early this year, to hear a study that Clemson Strom Thurmond Institute up in Clemson University put on concerning working with the county of Jasper and the cities that were down there on determining what their growth was going to be, because they're going from a community or county of under 30,000, actually it was under 20,000, to over 110,000 population within a very short period of time. So they're going to receive some massive growth and the relationship with it. The report that they had was probably one of the best reports I saw, because it was very simple and straightforward and easy to understand. And so we asked them late winter to come to Aiken to analyze our situation. So tonight we have the three gentlemen that have been working on this, Bill Molnar, Chip Taylor, and Rob Carey, and they're going to go ahead and make this presentation. They're going to go through about a 20-25 minute presentation. Then there will be some time for questions and answers. If you'd like, I'm sure if you interrupted them, they'll answer them on the spot. But there'll be plenty of time. Then after that's all over, depending on what council wants to do, we may want to take a 5 minute break, because we're going to have to change over some of the PowerPoint. And I will, to the best of my ability, run through the transportation projects and what the costs are in relationship to the anticipated growth in the number of trips that will be occurring on our roadways and what council may want to do with that. So with the mayor, unless you have anything else, we could ask Bill to come up and introduce the team and go forward.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us. My name is Bill Molnar. Actually, I'm with the Institute for Economic and Community Development, which is in Columbia. And my cohorts on this are Charles Taylor and Rob Carey. Both of them are working with the Strom Thurmond Institute up on campus. I'd like to first thank Ed Evans and the city manager, Roger LaDuke, for all your assistance, along with the other folks within the city government. You all were extremely helpful in getting the information and working with us to develop this analysis. And we just wanted to let you know that we're extremely happy with what we came up with. And we believe that the content, the format, and everything of this report is something that hopefully will prove very useful to the city as you make economic and development decisions for the folks here in the city of Aiken, as well as develop those policy instruments to govern this city over the next 2, 5, 10, 20 years. We've been lucky enough to be able to do these analyses across the state of South Carolina over the last 2 years, and have come up with some very interesting pieces of information. What we found is that every community is different, and that you really have to look at the financial and the growth levels of those communities in order to determine what the future costs and revenues will be and do those estimations. The team that did that Mr. Taylor and Mr. Carey have done a wonderful job. What I have to do is ask them to please present their findings to you. Afterwards, we'll have as much time as you like for question and answers. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Question we get asked a lot, and the question that's at the heart of this analysis is, does growth pay for itself? When you look at the revenues and expenditures that both derive from population growth, how do they balance out? And our question is, it depends. It depends on the type of development. It depends on the type of revenue sources that you have. They respond, all the revenue sources respond differently to growth. And those, a lot of times, depend on the sort of local development history you've had. I mentioned earlier the study we did for Jasper County. Their situation was different because they haven't had a lot of growth in the past, and that's affected the revenue decisions that they've made, and that affects the way growth affects their finances in the future. The city of Aiken and this area, on the other hand, had a long history of development, and so you've developed different revenue sources, and your situation's a little bit different. We looked at the fiscal impact of development on the general fund, which is your public works, public safety, planning, the administration, essentially everything except your utilities. We looked at the water and sewer utility, and we looked at the stormwater utility. Related but separate analysis on each one. Schematic version, fiscal impact analysis, what we look at when you have population growth, it sets two chains of events into motion. On the one hand, you have increased economic activity and investment. People build homes, they move into the community. That spurs additional commercial development, and all that results in increased revenue. On the other hand, you also have increased demand for government services. You have more people using parks, more people using your streets. Your public safety department has to, they work more accidents, have to respond to more calls. There's obviously a greater load on the planning department. So that requires additional staff members, additional equipment, and most importantly, additional infrastructure. Everything from additional parklands and facilities, firefighting equipment, more office space to house to hold more staff members, and so that increases the expenditures that the city has to lay out to maintain service to not only the new residents but your existing residents. Just to sort of outline the basic assumptions underneath our analysis, we assumed an annual growth rate of 2.3% over the next 20 years. That's higher if you look at census estimates, population estimates, implies a growth rate of just under 2%. But we looked at that. We also looked at your growth in utility accounts, growth in your solid waste collection accounts, and housing starts, and we think your actual growth rate is closer to 2.3%. And that's not unusual. The Census Department, they do the best job they can, but they can't be everywhere. We feel like the city has better records that are more up to date in that case. We assume that household sizes will continue to decline. That's a nationwide, as the baby boomers and the aging of the population, people having fewer kids and having kids later. Household sizes are declining. We assume that will continue, and so the average household size we're assuming through this the study period is 2.14 persons per household. And we assume that the average home value is about $156,000, which is based on the permit records, permit values that we obtain, and the information we ask for from the city. So that means approximately 17,000 more residents over the 2007 to 2026 period that we looked at, growing from something over 29,000 to something in excess of 45,000 people. And that means about 8,000, or nearly 8,000 households, additional households provide services to. The the good news is that our projection, we think your growth-related revenues will cover the increase in general fund operating expenditures. The revenues be about $141 million present value over the period, and operating expenditures about $114 million. And that's typically what we find in most of these studies we've done. The increase in revenues is usually enough to cover the increase in operating expenditures, which covers hiring additional employees, paying their salaries, the additional supplies that it takes for them to do their job, gasoline for patrol cars or operating expenses. Unfortunately, it doesn't generate enough revenue in this case or in the general rule to cover the capital expenditures, which would be buying additional equipment, new facilities, office buildings, public safety stations, buying additional parkland and improving it for people to use. And one of the more expensive infrastructure items is streets and roads, very expensive, and the additional population puts a load on that. So we're projecting, just based on operating revenues, revenues and operating capital expenditures, a deficit of about $38 million over the 20-year period. However, that doesn't include revenue coming in from the capital sales tax, capital improvement sales tax that's currently in effect. There's information we were provided. The city of Aiken's share of the current capital improvement sales tax is $28 million. We looked at the list of projects and determined that about half of that money is devoted to projects that will increase the city's capacity to serve additional residents. And those are the sort of projects that we assume will happen in this analysis: expanding the street system, adding a public safety station, buying firefighting equipment, additional parkland. All those sort of projects, about half that money is devoted to those purposes. The other half appeared to be devoted more to upgrading existing facilities or beautification, which are important projects too. We also noted that there's the potential, at least, to extend the collection of the tax, subject to the other local governments in the county and voter approval. But as I understand, this is your second time with the tax, so that tells me you must be keeping people happy with the way you're spending it. So if we assume just that the present tax will generate revenues that will offset some of these capital expenditures, about $13 million worth, so that would reduce the deficit to about $25 million over 20 years. And if we assume in the case that that the capital improvement sales tax could be extended throughout the entire 20-year period, and the city continued to devote about half the revenue to capacity-enhancing projects, it would generate around another $31 million to offset these capital expenditures and would leave you with a small surplus of about $6 million over the 20-year period. May wonder, well, where's all that money go? You probably won't be surprised to see that public works, public safety, and parks account for most of the increase in expenditures. That's also pretty typical of what we see in places. Those are the municipal operations that are tend to be both capital and labor intensive. In the park department, property gets more expensive all the time, the improvements to it, then you have to hire people to maintain it. Same thing, public works. We've broken it out, sanitation and non-sanitation. The public works, the non-sanitation part, is about $26 million. In that, we've assumed there's about $13 or $14 million worth of street improvements. I'll just mention how we came up with that. We're not traffic engineers, and as we urge the report to that you engage a competent transportation engineer as you have, but we based that we looked at the transportation improvements that you have in this current incarnation of the capital improvement sales tax and assume that that level of spending would continue on a per capita basis throughout the period and came up with that $13 or $14 million. We can't say for sure that that's adequate. We can't say for sure that it's not. And you know, we urge you to look at that closely. A large portion of this is you know, salary and other benefits, other employee expenses. It's broken out by function in the report, but we're estimating you to add about 155 employees in the general fund departments over the 20-year period. So a large portion of that, there's 60 in public safety alone, many of those sworn officers. And of course, most of the revenue we're expecting to come from property taxes, your business licenses and other permits, and charges for service, such as your solid waste fees and park and recreation fees, a very small portion from fines. This reflects, in large part, your existing breakdown of revenues. We're estimating that property tax and the licenses and permits will account for about 40% apiece, and the charges for services is about 20%. And again, these figures, the sales tax revenue is on top of these figures. These are the ones that we expect to grow with population.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Over here.
I'm sorry.
Hi. That's property tax as it is now.
Yes, ma'am. We assumed that the millage rates would be unchanged, and that all the laws as they stand right now stay.
But so what they're doing in the legislature could make this all different.
You're right. That's the legislature, I guess, is subject to change the rules at any time. And everything being as uncertain as right now, we didn't want to try and second guess them and act like we had a crystal ball or anything.
If the legislature and the voters approve the changes in the amount that could be assessed each year, by state law, as we go through any reassessment or there's any change, we know the tax values in Aiken are going up tremendously through this last assessment. We have to make certain that we do not charge any more in a given year of reassessment than the amount of change that's occurring. So in other words, if we were at, say, $100 million worth of property out there right now and went up to 150, we'd have to adjust our millage rate accordingly. So no matter what happens to the state legislature on what they want to do with reassessment, we're bound by law to not change the amount that we receive. If we're currently receiving $5 million in property taxes, the reassessment goes through, whether it's 5% or 25%, we still can only receive $5 million plus whatever capital CIP could happen during that 1 year period.
What about exemption for your owner?
We already have that in place for those. So that really is not going to affect our taxes in the future. The only effect that this graph here could have would be if council decides they want to make a change, going up or going down in their taxes.
I have a different question here.
Yes, ma'am.
My question relates to your presentation here. Do you have copies of the slides here that we could get? Could you make those available?
I can make those available.
I would appreciate that.
When we get back to the office, I'll email stuff to Ed and make sure. Ask him to distribute it.
Yeah, the graphic's really good for me. So
thank you.
Thank you.
That's unless there are any more questions about the general fund issues be addressed now. We're going to let Rob talk about the utilities, and then after that, we'll wrap up with some conclusions.
Hello. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening. I'm Rob Carey, and I'm going to cover the water and sewer utility as well as the stormwater utility, which, of course, is Mr. Taylor mentioned, is a substantial portion of the expenditures that are projected over the study period. Okay, the growth in water and sewer accounts takes into account the fact that Aiken provides service to outside water accounts as well as inside city limit water accounts. The outside agreement, of course, means that home residences and non-residential accounts outside of the city limits pay double water rate. And we projected the growth rate of that as well as the growth rate of residential and non-residential inside city limit water accounts. You see that the number of accounts added per year for inside the city limits ranges between 311 to 478 during the study period. It increases at an increasing rate each year, while the non-residential accounts grow fairly flat at roughly 20 per year over the study period. Outside the city limits, based on our historical trends that we have from the city, the growth in both residential and non-residential accounts outside of the city limits is relatively flat. It ranges from 40 to 41 per year, so there's not a substantial difference in the per year number that's added each year. Okay, in terms of the operating expenditures and revenues, we have it, of course, broken down here according to operating and capital expenditures. And I'll do the expenditures first. The operating expenditures include salaries and benefits for employees, the maintenance of equipment that is already owned by the city, and administrative and franchise fees that are involved with the operation. The capital expenditures include the purchase and construction of new facilities, you know, infrastructure, the purchase of new vehicles, and it also includes the capacity charges that will be added as the demand increases over the study period for the Horse Creek wastewater facility. I would note that the capital expenditures do exclude the costs that are borne by developers via impact fees. Okay, now in Table 19 of the report, we have the revenues rather than expenditures laid out in terms of how many personnel we envision being added, and roughly it comes out to about 19 additional workers being added in this water and sewer utility, and for a present value of about $51 million. That's for their salaries and benefits, and also including the other upkeep, maintenance of equipment costs. The capital portion expenditures, the things that I mentioned, we assume an addition of around $9 million for a total of increase in expenditures of roughly $60.5 million over the study period as in present value. Okay, the revenues, of course, come from the monthly user charges and the water and sewer tap fees, as well as impact fees. And so this is where the impact fees come on. They're not counted as part of the expenditures. They count as part of revenues. And so these we project as resulting in a total increase of roughly $71.5 million. And this results in an $11 million surplus overall for the water and sewer utilities, as denoted on the graph there. Now, the trick with this is that when we look at impact fees that developers pay and new accounts pay in when they tap into the water and sewer lines, these only cover the expenses of providing those services to the development of that service to these developing developments. And it does not cover the upgrade and replacement costs in the future that are going to result from the increased infrastructure. And so in order to do this, we added depreciation expense to our expense account expense estimates. And this resulted in the left side of the graph here, which, or rather the right side. The left side is the previous graph, which shows the $11 million surplus. When you add depreciation, that increases capital expenditures, and so you wind up with a small $3.5 million deficit. And this roughly comes out to an increase in $1.05 of expenditures for every dollar of additional revenue over the study period. So there is a small deficit in this particular account. Now, with the stormwater utility, we expect there to be a small deficit as well, but is somewhat closer to breaking even than the water and sewer. Again, the operating expenditures include salaries and benefits, the supplies for the stormwater utility, and the franchise fees and administration costs. These we project to be a present value of about $2 million over the study period. And the capital expenditures, which includes new construction and drainage facilities, and the purchase of new vehicles and equipment, we estimate at about $2.1 million for a total of about $4.2 million.
Is that for 20 years?
Yes, ma'am. And that's in terms of present value. It's discounted for the inflation and for interest rates during that time.
And replacing what it needs to be replaced and all that good stuff.
Right. Yeah. So additional drainage facilities and that nature. Okay. The revenues from the stormwater comes from added user fees from growth, and we estimate a $3.7 million increase in revenues, which leads to a $505,000 deficit on the left. If you add the sales tax, which Mr. Taylor went over, the capital improvement sales tax, we can add the revenue from that back into the revenue, and that allows us to have a much smaller deficit of only $103,000 for the stormwater utility. And that comes out to roughly $1.02 of additional expenditure for every additional dollar of revenue. And I'll turn it back over to Mr. Taylor for the conclusions.
Before I go on, I'll point out also, just as we're not transportation engineers, we're not stormwater engineers either, and our estimates of those expenditures are based on the investments that the city's been making dealing with the growth they've been dealing with. And we noted in the report that it would be important to also have engineers examine that and make sure that those investments are sufficient. So just to wrap up some conclusions, on the general fund, the fiscal impact of growth, we think it's moderate, moderate deficit. I say moderate not because $25 million is a small amount of money. It's a large amount of money, as everybody knows. I say it's moderate. City of Vegas in a little better situation, has a more favorable fiscal impact of growth than at least one other place that we've looked at. We've seen some places where there's a very, very large deficit. Overall, counting your existing capital improvement sales tax revenues, there's about $1.16 in additional expenditures for every dollar of revenue from growth. We've seen other places well in excess of that, much larger deficit relative to the growth. We also think it's moderate because you're already, with the capital improvement sales tax, you've already been taking some steps to deal with the capital improvements, which is a general rule what we found, and what we found here, that's the part that's driving the deficit. Local government revenues, most places, the growth will usually generate enough revenue to cover the operating expenditures, but it's not the capital expenditures are what causes the deficit. And with the capital improvement sales tax, you've already been looking forward and dealing with them. With the potential to extend the capital improvement sales tax, you have the potential to cover at least a very large part of the projected shortfall, if not all of it. So in general, we don't recommend any drastic changes at this point. We just recommend that you watch your rate of growth and your financial condition, and make any adjustments that you need. I want to talk about transportation infrastructure again. Like I said, our very rough estimate is $13.7 million, which is approximately 8% of all the growth-related expenditures that we've recommended. This is important. I live up in the upstate. There are a lot of places around there they've fallen behind on transportation infrastructure. There's a lot of traffic congestion everywhere you go, and it's a very tough hole to dig out of once you get in it.
Excuse me, I just wanted to clarify this point. You've got $13.7 million is the figure you're using. That figure was arrived at based on an extension of what's been in the capital sales tax program. Is that what I understand?
Yes, sir.
That was your only basis for this estimate?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Through 2026, right?
Well,
you just took every year.
Well, we looked at the current current spending over the next 6 or 7 years, right, and looked at the projects. There are a number of projects in there that expand street capacity, either actually construction of connector roads,
right,
or studies planning for future connector roads,
right,
and we took that spending. Looked at it on a per capita basis of the growth during that period, which is about $800 per capita per new resident, and we assume that adjusting for inflation that you would continue spending at that rate throughout the 20-year period.
I understand that when we look at some of these numbers here on transportation, what all they were doing was not looking at the major projects that we have looming out there. Some of that was for maintenance that we're currently doing. Some of that's already within the 1 cent sales tax that we already have allocated. And within the 1 cent sales tax, we have $350,000 for an extension to the mall. We have $750,000 for the Pawnee Road extension. We have over $1.325 million for the connector road with Powerhouse and the parallel with Whiskey, and then we have some money, a small amount of money in there for doing various studies on Doherty Road, the north side, etc. So we had in the once in sales tax some money, and again that's only lasting another 5 to 6 years, and they're projecting out for 20 years. Plus we have money in the budget for resurfacing the roads every year, and other various projects that Larry might have put in there, like 1 year we did the roundabout. So again, they're looking at historical data plus trying to make some projections based on that, whereas later we'll be talking about the bypass widening $16 million. The Powderhouse Connector Road was, I think, over $13 million. So those are going to be the big ticket items. We'll be talking about those specifically that are going to be done over the next 10 years, not 20 years.
And they're not part of this estimate, which is what I really wanted to be.
Right. Right. I can't stress strongly enough that we can't say that the estimate we've got will be adequate. I know one of the last projects we worked on, that they had a transportation engineering firm looking at the parallel growth scenario that we're dealing with, and we incorporated their figures into our report, and it was a much higher expenditure than $800 per capita. I forget exactly what it was, but it was a good bit more.
I think ours would be the same way. Ours would be a good bit more too, but this gives us a wonderful base, I think, what you've done, mm-hmm, as to what's in the budget now and those relatively every year maintenance items and some of those things, as Roger's pointed out, and then we can add to that as we go what the estimates are for some of these bills.
And we asked them specifically not to look into that area because it's complicated.
Yeah. It's such an important issue that it really is best addressed separately. We try and give the best estimate we can, and then we point out in the report what that it is the best estimate we can, but there are much better estimates you can get elsewhere. And so like we pointed out, we were aware that you were looking at investigating some sort of transportation, additional transportation revenues, and so we recommend that you basically continue doing what you've got planned. You're on, in our opinion, you're on the right track. And the alternative funding may be required to cover the transportation infrastructure needs that come from growth. And finally, basically, it appears to us that both utilities are operating at approximately a break-even basis. That's good. My background before I did this, I worked for a municipal utility in Missouri, and we were always happy to operate at break-even. So again, we just recommend that you watch your rate of growth, watch how it's affecting your expenditures, and adjust as needed. I seem to recall seeing on your website sometime while we were working on the project, I think you had an adjustment to utility rates, and we've assumed that those sort of adjustments occur throughout the study period, and that's, like I said, we can't make any drastic recommendations. That we feel like city's on the right track, and that's the end of our formal presentation. We'll be glad to answer any more questions that you have, and I put that up there if anybody thinks of something after we've gone home. Feel free to contact us, and we'll be glad to answer any question we can. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chip and Rob. This is a wealth of information here. It's going to take me, I know, some time to study it and go through it, but we really appreciate what you put together for us and the work you've done for us. Are there any questions that anyone has at this point?
I'm noticing that it looks like our break-even point is determined by customers located outside the city limits. Because of what we charge when they're outside the city limits, it means if we annex a lot of those properties, this number, the deficit numbers, could go higher. Is that what we're seeing here?
Yes, you're referring to, I guess, especially in the water department, there's a fairly significant number of your customers outside, and obviously, as they, if they're annexed in, it will put some upward pressure on your rates because you won't be getting the higher rate from them.
Wouldn't that add to the general fund in and of itself that they're now annexed, and we'd be getting taxes from them.
You would be getting property tax that you're not, mm-hmm. obviously getting now. You would have some operating expenditures that you don't have now. I mean, the public safety department would have to respond to calls there. The city would be, I assume, responsible for maintaining, the streets that they took in. Those issues probably close to a wash. I mean, on the other hand, those people, many of them already work in town. They come to town to shop, so there's a lot of the traffic issues, you're already dealing with. I mean, they're there, so I guess, you wouldn't be getting all the revenue that you might get, or you wouldn't have all the expenses that you'd have compared to a home that's not there and then is built and is in the city. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
It does. Thank you.
During your discussion, I think it was you, Chip, maybe Rob, but I think it was you. You said something about $1.16 expense on average for every dollar that you take in.
Yes.
Now, is that an average over? How do you figure that?
That's just the ratio, the 20 years expenditures to the 20 years revenue.
And our study, it's not a statewide thing. This is strictly our study that you got.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you're correct. We stand pretty well as far as the state is concerned. And actually, there's a national figure in this, too. Do you happen to know what the current national figure is running?
We've seen... I don't know about national. I've seen a lot of other cost of community service studies that are a little bit different than what we're doing here. And you know, they'll find for residential development alone, anywhere it can be anywhere from say $1.25 to over $2. Just depends. Now, that doesn't compare right directly with this because we've got the residential and the commercial all considered together. But what we've seen in our other ones, I guess, typically, if somebody asked me off the top of my head, I'd say it's around $1.26, $1.27. It would be a typical ratio here in South Carolina.
And the bottom line is residential growth does not pay for itself.
In our experience, as a general rule, no. There's some exceptions, some exceptional places where it does, but this isn't, we don't think, one of them.
One of the basic premise on that, Dick, is that they're figuring the average home in Aiken is just a little over $150,000. For it to pay for itself, if the homes were running $190,000 to $200,000, then it probably would pay for itself.
Yes.
And that was going to be my follow-up question. I apologize for being late, but I had a meeting in Orangeburg and just broke the speed limit to get back here to this meeting. Nevertheless, I've got my chief. Atlanta is growing at an average, I understand, of 2,000 people per month, and Nevada around 5,000. I'm just wondering whether you compare it to cities with such rapid growth. And Walter just made a comment regarding the cost of homes that perhaps that offset the some costs with the those incomes. But have you done comparison with those areas to see trends here?
No, we haven't really done a comparison. I guess, you know, the communities we've worked in are so much smaller than Atlanta. We haven't, you know, or you know, Las Vegas, where they're having a lot of that growth. We haven't really done that comparison. Like I said, we've seen reviews of other studies similar to the ones we've done, and they find similar results to what we've found. That I will say this: what we've seen, you know, so those places where they have much, much more rapid growth, growing faster doesn't usually fix the problem. Mm-hmm. It just you can fall behind even faster. Generally speaking,
I think the property tax situation will change this figure too. We haven't in the city had a property tax increase in 18 years. Now, have we had some increases along the way? I don't know. I would think you'd expect to see this difference between revenue in and expenditures come closer to being the same. Can't you, by raising your property taxes or some other tax, you can get that more even, or to be the same, or even, you know, make money on the deal, if you will.
Yes, sir. There are, you know, a lot of different options that, you know, communities have. I'll say this: if there's a deficit, it's paid for one way or the other. Either additional revenue is generated, or everybody's, you know, service level declines. There's no.
Because theoretically, with this formula here, we'd be in deficit every year. If you take it to the extreme here, if it's costing us $1.16 for every dollar we take in, then we're in trouble.
That's
in a way. I mean, that's a generality, but I realize it's more complicated formula than that.
Right. But, I mean, this assumes that, you know, you continue hiring the staff that you need to provide the same level of service that you've been providing. It assumes that, you know, nothing changes with the revenues, and so, yeah, they diverge.
I realize that's not exactly accurate what I said, but it's a generality that it leaves one to give a lot of thought to.
This is dealing with expansion, however, and if you start talking about raising the real estate taxes, then we're making current residents as well pay for growth.
Yeah.
That's really the argument.
I want to make it clear, I'm not proposing that at all.
I just didn't want to have that out there.
I'm just merely throwing out an example of a balancing situation. We're not getting more money in over the years, really, for property taxes. But if you did that, or some other fee or tax or something. No, I'm not proposing any new taxes at this time.
Bill, suppose, things were to stop, no more growth. Things just leveled out right here. No one built another house. No one else moved into the community. Would our current revenue sources pay for the current services, or are we still looking at that deficit currently without any growth, any expansion? Is that something that's only going to happen in the future? Are we currently having a dollar of expenditure for every dollar of revenue now, and it's the growth that's going to create the additional shortage? Or is it that we're at a shortage now, and then it's just going to continue?
But I guess the financial documents we looked at while we were doing this, the city's budget appears to be in balance now. And what we're saying is that it appears that your existing revenues keep track with your operating costs. We're projecting, and I didn't look at that specific. I didn't look at it. We didn't look at a no growth scenario specifically, but I would think that if you're in balance now, you probably continue to be in balance, except capital infrastructure wears out, has to be replaced. And one of the things that drives operating expenditures a lot, as I'm sure you're aware, healthcare expenditures. And those are growing faster than inflation. And so I'd say you've got that out there, but we didn't look at it. We didn't specifically look at a no growth scenario and assume, try and assume what would happen.
Well, we're currently in balance, but we're in balance because we've got the capital sales tax coming in, and that plays a part of our budget today. And I think that's probably what's helping keep us in balance today, and that's what we're depending upon to keep us in balance 10 to 12 years, if I'm understanding correctly what you're saying.
Without taking any other steps.
Yes.
And that's a good point, because if it is going to be, that's what's going to be needed to keep us in balance, we better remember when we do that list for capital sales tax that we can't add these nice little projects that we think need to be interesting and extra, because they won't be able to be funded with that unless we're going to raise the capital sales, unless we're going to raise taxes.
And it seems to me one other thing on the sales tax, if the new tax thing goes through, aren't we going to have a 2% increase in the state sales tax overall?
Is it? What's 1%?
On food and stuff, it's supposed to go down, I believe, to 3%, but then everything else goes up 2%.
I thought it was 1%. 1%.
1%.
They were talking about all kinds of percents, but I think the way it came out,
it goes
1%.
Up to 7 on everything, and then food goes down.
Yeah.
Is that?
That's
so, again, that's. Then we have to go on top of that, so then you get to 8%.
To try to answer your question, Don, maybe as simply as I can, if we had no more growth, over half of our operation and maintenance is personnel. And personnel, as was related, there are health insurance, there's raises, let's say 4% a year, which is what we historically have done. So we would be running, we'd have to come up with more revenue in some manner or another. And therefore, we'd have to raise fees or do something else. We recognized back in 2000, we were getting revenue in from the hospitality tax of about 2%, which was bringing into the city of Aiken around $1.4 to $1.6 million a year. One of the things we did is we eliminated the hospitality tax and in lieu of the 1-cent sales tax. So if we lost the 1-cent sales tax, we have adjusted our budgeting process to make up for the other revenue losses by relying on it. If for some reason, and fortunately the projects that we've had in the past have been good projects and the voters have approved it, but 5-6 years from now, if that came up and we did not get it, then the city would have to look at what other alternative means we have to raise the money, or we just would not have any other capital projects, which includes some operation and maintenance of roads, and we have water lines in this one and sewer lines, etc. So we'd have to really look at that very carefully. As we're stated here, we're fine as long as the 1 cent sales tax continues based on projections. But if it doesn't continue, then there would be a deficit that we'd have to deal with.
The only difference to that, we're fine as long as we don't have some critical projects that need to move ahead faster than normal, such as some connector roads. And
this does not take into account the time rates.
Time has a lot to do with this, too. You know, we can't wait 6 years, for instance, to the next sales tax to see if we can get $15 million for connector roads or something like that. We've got to do something much quicker.
We're already behind the curve.
Well, depending on how you feel about it. But it's obvious, I think, that we need to take action quickly, as soon as we can. But anyway, your report is excellent. We appreciate everything you've done, and it certainly gives us a good base, I think, to build on and to help us know where we are.
One thing I'd like to brag on our staff, when he stated that we're at $1.16, that's one of the lowest I've ever seen, if not the lowest. And much of that credit goes to the staff and what they have been able to do with the personnel that we have. When they looked at Jasper County, which their population was going to go well over 100,000, and they looked at the numbers of personnel needed per 1,000 capita, and I'm trying to remember, but I think it was like 10.2 or 10.3 persons were needed to satisfy the service needs of that population per 1,000. We were already well underneath that, and that was their projection 20 years hence after they had over 120,000 population. And our number of employees per 1,000 is actually less than that today. What it says is that I believe we provide great services with a, and at times we're squeezed by the number of people we have, and each of the department has to do a great job in what we have as far as personnel, and it just goes to the point that we have great people out there working for us, and that's why we're able to keep it at $1.16. Now, with that, I'm sure tomorrow morning I'll be getting several requests from department heads for more people, but that's... Pete's already...
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chip.
Thank you.
Very much. Thank you, Rob. Where's Rob? Okay.
And we will go ahead and get an agenda package on Thursday, a copy of this report. And, Ed, I don't know if you can get that in color or not. The color is great.
It
or Sarah, whoever's going to do it. But if you could give us 5 minutes, then we'll go ahead and get the next presentation ready.
Sure. Okay. Let's take a 5-minute break then.
Besides, everyone wants to stand up.
Okay, we're ready to go get back to work here on the second item. Roger's going to talk to us about future transportation improvements.
Will you give your full name and address, please, sir?
Yeah, and where you live, too.
The downstairs room. I think I live there. First of all, I apologize on behalf of Roger Dyer, who cannot make it tonight. He's got some situations he's had to deal with in Spartanburg and was not able to be here. And one of the council members asked if we had something in writing that we could give you tonight. We just got this through the wonderful email system today that was electronically given to us. It was through the miracles of our IS staff, information services. They were able to download it into our computer. And between the two of us, we're hoping we're going to be able to give you a presentation tonight. If you recall that in 2003, a traffic management ordinance was given to City Council to primarily ask developers to deal with the type of traffic study or tool that council could use. It's kind of like having that toolbox and giving tools to you to use to better analyze new growth and development that was going to occur in Aiken in the future. And one of those being that traffic management ordinance or traffic studies they would have, and then how would the improvements that were associated with this development going to be paid for. With that, we had a traffic impact fee that was associated with various projects over the next 5 years for council to review and determine if you wanted to put in place that impact fee to pay for those roadway projects. It was at that time there was a lot of discussion that council had, and if I recall correctly, and I understand 3 years, my memory loss goes very quickly after just a few weeks, but the conversation that we had was, we had a 1 cent sales tax coming up later that fall, and that some of these projects and the amount of money that we may need to generate to pay for these projects, some of that could be dealt with the 1 cent sales tax. And yes, we have placed some money in the 1 cent sales tax to deal with some of these projects, but not to the scope and the magnitude that is going to be needed. So I'm going to walk you through a number of things here. The first thing, if you look on the left-hand side here, is the projects that we have identified that are going to be needed. And again, at the very top, we're talking about a 10-year period from 2006 to 2016. The next column is the cost estimate based on today's cost. Now, these projects here, these two, are, well, this one right here, Silver Bluff at Doherty, has already been drawn up, completed, ready to go, and same thing here. That's going to give you the two right-hand turn lanes at Whiskey, two left-hand turn lanes at Silver Bluff Road. The Highway Department's going to go ahead and proceed with that using the Augusta Regional Transportation System funding. If for some reason the cost goes up higher than what we anticipate, and I'm sure it will because that's what's happened lately with roadway projects, they will have to get additional funding through ARTS. The only thing holding us back right now is where is the drainage going to go from the Silver Bluff-Doherty Road intersection. It's probably going to go into our detention pond behind the former Kmart. The complicated issue is some of the water comes from the county, some of the water comes from the city, and some of the water comes from the state, and then some of the water comes from the South Aiken Baptist Church. And so we have to divide out and determine who's going to pay for what for that drainage. That should be resolved in the next couple of months. We anticipate the first quarter of next year those projects should start. The second projects here are the Doherty to the Mall and to Walmart. The one to the Walmart, the drawings have been completed. We're obtaining the right-of-way right now. We're working with Walmart to give us those easements. That'll, in other words, there'll be an entrance to the back of Walmart. We're looking at several other easements that we need to obtain from Gilmore and Associates, the Sunshine House, and the individuals that have the Hitchcock Plaza. We hope to start that project again in the first quarter of next year, and there will be then a direct link from Pine Log Road down Pawnee, then to Nielsen and on to Doherty Road, and eventually a traffic signal at Doherty and Nielsen. That's anticipated 1.2. We will not get started until next year, so that's going to go up. The Doherty to the Mall, we're ready to go, except we have not been able to finalize negotiation with the property owner. They said they do not want to sell, and unless council decides they want to condemn some property, which I felt at this point in time we do not, we've been putting ourselves on hold on that project. Those two projects, these two here, within the 1 cent sales tax, we have $1,050,000. At Monday night's council meeting. I'll be talking to you about money that we had left over in last year's budget, and I believe there's about $250,000 that I'm looking to apply towards this project here. The next couple items here are Whiskey Road improvements. It's more safety improvements. It's getting rid of some of the driveways, getting rid of those open ditches, getting the proper lighting, doing the proper signalization, timing the signals, putting in some sidewalks. That would be done over the next 10 years, and you can see we have about $3 million, figure $300,000 each year. We do have $700,000 in the 1 cent sales tax to pay for some of those improvements. The next one is some interparcel connections. That number there, that could be $200,000, it could be $400,000. We just don't know how many we're going to do and when we're going to do them. The one that went to Walmart, that went between Crystals and Arby's, cost us over $100,000. That's the type of improvements we're talking about. The big ones that we're talking about, though, are the Whiskey Powderhouse Connector. That was approved by the committee at their last meeting. They're looking at an upgrade of the cost estimates on this. We called the consultants last Friday. They said it looks like it'll be about $9.5 million. We figured it's going to be about 3 years, 2 to 3 years before we can start construction. By the time you get the right of way, you do your engineering. Usually it takes about a year for engineering, about a year to obtain right of way. Now, hopefully in this case, maybe we won't have to obtain as much right of way because most of it's by just a few property owners. But again, looking at some inflation involved, minus money that's already set aside in 1 cent sales tax, it leaves about $10 million still needed for that project. The Whiskey Silver Bluff, they just met at the meeting last Thursday. Thursday, I think it was, and they came up with a new route. This new route should actually, if anything, save some money. Ron Monahan, who you've met on another project off of Trucker Creek Road, has purchased property along Anderson Pond Road, and he wants the road to go through his property. It will actually take out some of the horizontal and vertical curvature problems on Anderson Pond Road and probably make less improvements, even though it's a little bit further south of where they would like it to actually interconnect. It was a unanimous vote by the committee, and so that'll be coming back to City Council in the very near future. My estimate, and I don't have anybody else's but mine, so if you don't like the estimate, it's me. I'm figuring that we got about $4 million. The county has over $1 million in funds available for paving of Anderson Pond Road. They have some money set aside for some improvements. Most of that $4 million, I feel, is going to come between Glenwood Drive on Silver Bluff Road down to where it would connect near the gate at Woodside. Possibly a little bit of that money might have to be used at the eastern side as it comes into Chime Bell Church Road. So I have a conservative estimate of $4 million. And the last project...
Roger, excuse me. What's the county doing to try to get that money?
The county has... and I talked to Scott Singer last week. I believe they got $750,000 in the 1 cent sales tax. They have over $1 million set aside in road paving funds with the 1 cent sales tax from the year 2000. And they might have a little bit of other money. He wasn't certain. But they have about $2 million.
Okay. Don't they have a bond issue that they just passed? And that provided some money?
That's that $1 million plus dollars that they have.
Okay. Plus a million some dollars in the first sales tax.
Well, and that's right? The money that they have available. That money ran out for them. In other words, they ran out of all that paving money, so that bond issue that they just approved was to take in the short gap of the, not just Anderson Pond Road, but several of the roads that didn't get paved from the 2000 list.
Okay.
So it's not like they got a double set of money here.
Right.
It's the same amount of money. And the last project, which was in the editorial of today's paper, and so we did not ask them to put that editorial in. We did not just throw this in at the last moment because we saw the editorial. We've been looking at the Hitchcock Parkway widening for some time. It's going to be about $16 million to go to a
primarily just a four-lane roadway. You do not need a five-lane roadway out there because it's a limited access highway. In other words, you will, what access you see out there now is probably all the access you'll need, so you don't have to have a fifth turn lane, because basically all those improvements or all those access are ready. You either have a left-hand turn lane or there will be one in the near future. But you will have to widen the road for two more lanes. The right-of-way is primarily there, but there's a lot of earth moving to be done, a lot of ditch work to be done, some piping to be done, some utilities to move, and we're estimating that to be 16. But with inflation, based on 3% per year, we're up to $18.5 million, because that project will not probably start unless we come up with some funding for another 5 to 7 years.
Roger.
And unless we come up with some funding for that.
Your inflated cost goes up to 2016 or just now?
I mean, that's assuming some projects will start in year one, some projects will start in year three, some might start in year five, some might start in year seven.
Okay.
And it's a 3% inflationary factor for each year that we added on to this to give us the best guesstimate that we could have. That comes up to needing around $40+ million, of which we have around $5 million right now available through various sources. You know, if the 1 cent sales tax comes along in 2010, 2011, there might be some more money. I did not figure any more money from any future 1 cent sales tax coming in. So this is all based on the fact that we need around $35 million here for these projects. Everybody with me so far? That was the easy part. The next part, which Roger could explain a lot better if he were here, is this is exactly what he did 3 years ago. We're trying to get some updated figures on what additional trips will be generated based on growth over the next 10 years. The model he's using is a model that Arch was using in 2003. They're right now completing an update of that model, and that's why we don't have those numbers. For that reason, the number that we're showing could vary by as much as 15%. We feel our number's fairly close, but the numbers we're using tonight could be 15% higher or could be 15% lower. He should have, within the next 2 weeks to 4 weeks, that updated number for us. Would you say that's correct? So that's the number of trips that we're seeing here. Again, that's just showing the model that we were using. It was 2003. When we look at it, and we look at that $35 million figure at the top, which, again, that's the number we just went through, the number of new trips from 2006 to so over a 10-year period, the number of trips that are going to be new trips, not existing trips, but new trips generated by new growth based on this model. And if you look at the two, each trip would amount to $102.82. Now, if you look at a residential single-family detached home, the number of trips that are generated per day by a typical household is a little under 10 trips per day. It's about 9.6. If you go to attached homes, a little bit less. You go to condominiums, a little bit less. If I did a thorough analysis of Woodside, it would probably be less because the age of the population there, internal trips, etc. But this is all the trips that we would see based, again, on the fact that we had the $35 million, which that number could change, again, depending on what council wants to do with an extra 1 cent sales tax. But it's even if we said, let's take $5 million or $10 million from the next 1 cent sales tax, we still have to generate a lot of additional funding there. And based on the number of new trips, that's not existing, but new trips. When we start looking at what that would typically cost then, for a single family unit. If we went and looked at the last column, that's assuming that a new single family home was going to go ahead and pay for that $35 million, it would mean that we'd put an impact fee at 100% of $984.19. When we did this 2003, it was about $875. So it's gone up a little bit. The roadway construction costs have increased dramatically because of oil and the petroleum that they use and road construction equipment. And that's one of the reasons. Plus, when we looked at this 3 years ago, we had not included the Hitchcock Parkway widening. And that's a big project at $16 million. We try to give you some other numbers, and some of these probably don't mean a lot. But again, if you're looking at general office space, so again, if you're looking at an office building that's 10,000 square feet, you could just multiply that 10,000. That means that an impact fee for an office building would be $10,000. And again, that's at 100%. Now, I ask him to look at it because council is always, well, what if it's, we do 10% or 25 or 50? So there, again, you just have some different numbers here based on what factor you want to use on impact fee. Again, there's a lot of different things to look at when you're trying to determine how much money is going to be raised. Question that Councilmember Wells asked, what if we had no more new development whatsoever? Obviously, you would generate no money whatsoever. What happens, let's give a real case scenario, Sam's. We've all heard of Sam's. They're thinking about possibly buying some property on the south side. They're talking about now on the north side somewhere. What if they decided to come into the city of Aiken and they had 5,000 trips a day? Each trip is valued at $100. Very easily, that's $500,000 that you would be looking at for an impact fee. Now, what if Sam says, well, City of Aiken, I could go ahead and move just outside the city and locate somewhere in the county and put in a well and septic tank in, which they could do. It wouldn't take very much because they're not a water user. It's not the money that we'd lose, but the fact that they're still generating that traffic. And so we have to be very careful when we look at this. You still have the same impact inside or outside the city. But again, those numbers, if they get too high, could very easily take a business and move it outside the city. Councilwoman Waters has been talking about for a long time about business license taxes. And you know, this is a tax, except it's an impact fee tax. So on the one hand, we have to go ahead and look at how we're going to generate the money, but we have to also look at how is it going to impact the businesses and the development that comes in. The other thing is I've been asked on several occasions, when would this take place? Woodside just we annexed an area that will have 1,000 new homes. Does this mean now that we've already annexed it that that fee would not be apportioned to that development? Well, the way we would look at it and the way that we would fix any new ordinance, it would go with the building permit. So if you went ahead and got a construction permit for a home in Woodside in phase one, even though that started 15 years ago, there would still be that impact fee on that home. If it was on a new business and they've already broken ground like Walmart, no, it wouldn't be on Walmart. But it would be on business as they go ahead and get the permit. Give you some typical idea about, again, that 10% recovery versus 100% recovery. Convenience store. We all know what a convenience store is. I'm not too sure exactly how many trips that they're generating each day, but you can see it's $88,000 that we're talking about here. Medical office, a little less than $50,000. Fast food, $111,000. Again, that's based on the figure, I think it was $984 per trip. So what is the... Go ahead.
Roger, excuse me. Is that the normal way that we see other impact fees across the state, across the nation, figured based on trips and not necessarily the price or the cost of the facility or square footage or that kind of thing?
Whenever you come up with an impact fee, according to state law, it has to go ahead and relate directly to why you're having that fee. When we did the water impact fee about 3 or 4 years ago, it had a direct correlation between the fact that we got so much money coming in for water, new generation of new growth, that had to be used strictly for new projects in water. We couldn't use that for O&M, new water plants. If we said that we did it based on
the value of the property. We may go ahead and get a very expensive property that generates very few trips. And so there wouldn't be a correlation between the value of the property and the traffic problems that that could generate from the new business. The trips correlate very well. Now, I've seen some do it on square footage, but to me that does not correlate. This is a, could be defended very easily, and it's what most of the communities use in coming up with impact fees across the United States.
Well, one thing that concerns me about the trips, just to take an average of 10 trips per day per residential unit, is not very accurate, in my opinion. You may have a family with several cars, and certainly they might go 10 trips or maybe even more. But then you have a family, maybe two people. They go to work, they come home. That's four trips. But trying to get to 10 trips for two people that are working, I realize that's an average. I guess it's somebody or some group has figured out that that's as close as you can
historical
get.
Historical data from the Institute of Traffic Engineers over generations or decades of time.
And how up to date is it now?
They update it every year. Now, the thing that they're looking at is because the type of development has changed, where 60s, 70s, even into the 80s, your typical single-family home was on a third to a half acre, maybe three-quarter of an acre lot, and now you're getting your, we have 50% of our new homes in Aiken are attached units, and so they're generating new models and trying to generate what is that traffic on an attached unit that might be more of a single-family household or just two individuals there, but typically not four or five, mm-hmm. like we see in a family. And then again, we're looking at, in Aiken, we went from 2.34 persons per household down to 2.14, if I recall the numbers, from the study that we just had. So we're having a decrease, and so ITE is going to have to look at that nationally as to how that relates.
Mm-hmm. You take a place like Woodside, where a lot of those folks, they go days and they won't even come out on the public streets.
But that's still a trip, even if it's internal.
Well, okay, well that's an area I think that could be argued a little bit.
But the numbers on Woodside are pretty impressive, really. I've talked to Mr. Berry about some of the counts they've had, and what you've got to add into it are the delivery trucks that come and go, all the other things.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about the residents that live there. I know there's some that might make two trips, maybe four trips a day.
And those residents are creating the trips that come from the landscapers and the delivery trucks. There are a lot of other things.
Yeah. This is why council could look at and say, maybe it's a recovery of 100%, maybe it's 80%. 60, maybe it's 25. That's
Well, I'm not arguing with the number, really. I'm trying to understand it.
Right. And that's how it's done.
And Dick, you make a good point there about the delivery trucks and those kind of things.
Roger, I'm sorry. I would make the argument the other way, too. If it turned out that it was six trips a day, then they'd have to be $140 a trip in order for us to get the cost that we need recovered.
I mean, you still need to come up with that $35 million somehow.
Right.
The county is not interested in this, or are they?
Well, I'll let the mayor speak on that.
Well, I think they're beginning to talk about it as well, and that's about all I know. There is some discussion in the county. I don't know if I don't think it's been an agenda item, but Roger, do you?
Yeah, the mayor and I have met with a couple of county folks on a number of occasions. We have talked about impact fee and how important we feel it is that if we do this, that there be joint collaboration as much as possible. Because, again, take that Sam's. If they decide to locate in the county, which let's take that site that they're looking at, right, that they've been looking at, and let's say they want to go to the Holly track that's just to the south, Mundy Store. About the same size property, they could do that. Still, they're still generating all the traffic there, but they wouldn't have to go and follow any of our regulations. And if we had an impact fee, they wouldn't have to follow that either. So the county's looking at a number of things. In fact, in their agenda package for tomorrow is to look at a fiscal impact analysis and impact fees and to hire a consultant to do a lot of that analysis for them as to what they may need to be looking at.
those Somerville impact fees held up in court, did they
that,
not?
That is correct.
Are they as high as this?
I don't know. Their fees were like $3,000 or $4,000 per unit, but included other things than just transportation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their fees were to deal with parks and recreation. I think fire service fees and some. I don't think they dealt with traffic specifically.
Traffic.
They did not deal with traffic.
Well, that was part of it. I think that was part of it.
It was part of it.
Yeah.
And it was several thousand.
Had a whole list of things that added up to that big value, that big number.
Roger, I'm in full agreement that we've got to find the revenue to get these roads, these connector roads built, and to do that as quickly as possible. The problem that I have with impact fees upon the new construction is we're sitting now with, just take Woodside for existence, we've got 1,200 homes located in there now, which creates traffic on Whiskey Road and Eastgate Drive and Silver Bluff. Silver Bluff needs widening, and Whiskey Road, definitely we need those connector roads. We've got 1,000 new homes that's going to be constructed out there. If we just charge the new homes and we neglect those 1,200 residents that's traveling those same roads, that's creating that same traffic situation that we're faced with, then I feel like that we're charging the last man in and neglecting the rest of us that travel those roads. It's not just the new people that's created the problem. We've had the situation of needing the connector roads for some time. And I feel like it's a last man in picking up the tab. On Whiskey Road, Walmart out there, who's been located out there for a long time, creates a tremendous amount of traffic on Whiskey Road. Now, simply because a new shopping center goes in, a smaller center down the way, which adds to the traffic that's created by Walmart. I mean, do we let Walmart get off scot-free and we charge that new restaurant that's going in down there? To me, it's just not a fair way of doing it. I don't know what the fair way would be, Roger, but I just feel like that there's a way that we can spread this out among our residents to where it would be a fair, and I don't mind charging some new construction for part of this, but I think that there's folks like us who've lived here for a long time that, you know, we're going to travel those roads as well. Now, why should this new development pick up the tab for paving this road when I'm going to travel? And that's the problem that I have with the impact fees and the fairness of it.
Now, the logic in part for an impact fee for new roads is the fact that the roads that are already there are quite adequate for the people that are there. It's only the new people that are creating the need for the additional roads. So in order to be able to come here, and for all of us to live comfortably, they ought to pay the cost.
I understand for a new road that's going in to Woodside, they need to pay for that. Yes, I fully understand that. If there's, if another road needs to be added in there, they need to pay for that. But what about the fact that we've needed a connector road between Silver Bluff and Whiskey for how many years, Dick?
Well, that's the point in which you've got to better define. You made a statement, and people all the time are making statement about standstill traffic on Whiskey Road. Terrible traffic on Whiskey Road. I'm here to tell you that I disagree with that. And Don, it depends on your baseline definition at some point in time about if we do anything else, we're going to go over that point. Now, if you feel like we've needed another crossroad for years, that's one thing. If you think that we can live today if we had no new growth like we are now, which I think we could, I'm on that road 4 times a day. I tell you what, I went down there, out there today, and I stopped at one, had to stop at one light. And different people have different opinions. And this is a lot of hype that people grab onto, too. And they say, oh, yeah, we got a lot of traffic. I don't like that traffic. And we do have traffic, but it's not traffic that you can't, if you're not patient, that you can't motor right on down there and do your business and get along. So to me, it's defining at what point do you determine that enough's enough, so to speak, and anything beyond this point requires another road or widening a road or whatever. That's my opinion.
Mayor, I totally agree with you. I don't have a problem navigating down Whiskey Road. But what I'm saying is we're faced right now with these connector roads because we were faced with a public outcry when Sam's was going to locate on Whiskey Road. It wasn't me that was complaining about that, but about it creating more traffic on Powder House and creating more traffic on Whiskey Road. Dick Smith has said that the Powder House Road, as well as Pine, the section of Pine Log Road, was way over their comfortable travel loads, according to some of the stats. So these were the things that I'm looking at. Personally, it doesn't take but one trip to Atlanta to realize we don't have any traffic problems here in Aiken. But, you know, if we're faced with building new roads that we're all going to travel, I have a problem with giving the tab to the new people moving into town. If we could find a more equitable way of providing that, I would be all in favor of it. But to tag the new guy with the cost of a connector road that we're all going to travel, I really have a major problem with that. And that's, I'm with you. I travel Whiskey Road up and down. I don't have a problem with it. I don't mind sitting at a red light. You know, it gives me a little time to think. And it's a beautiful drive.
Mr. Mayor,
yes, ma'am.
Two things. The impact fee as well as the traffic concerns on Whiskey Road. I do get impatient when I travel Whiskey Road, and that's simply because I'm rushing to a meeting. Everybody is in my way. I've left late, and I want to go through the traffic and get to my meeting to try to get there on time. But if I had left 5 to 7 minutes earlier, I would have arrived at my meeting in plenty of time to get where I need to go. And I find that, and I'm in traffic some of the busiest times because I'm back and forth to Savannah Riverside, and it's less than 10 minutes of inconvenience. And interestingly enough, we have quite a few folks that will come by Newbury Street across the street who are newcomers in town who are looking at our town to move to. And as they come to the receptions area, the administrative assistance area, I will mention something about our traffic problems as a concern of this town. And they laugh at me. But they laugh at me at this juncture. After they've been here 6 months, then it is a traffic problem to them because they want to, as I do, want to get where they want to go in a hurry. So that's my take on the traffic concerns. The impact fee, for a long time, we have talked about growth paying for itself. It's raised its head time and time again on this council with growth paying for itself. I was not totally convinced of growth paying for itself, and I'm going to use the word newcomers, but new businesses, new folks coming to town, sharing in that growth until, or paying for that growth until recently. Either we're going to say time out, lock, let's put fences, stop everybody from coming in, and let's stay as we are, or have developers pay for the new growth. There comes a time when things change, and although we all feel that we should share in those in those costs, I'm not a contributor. I've been here for 50 some odd years, and I'm not a contributor to that growth. I came here when the cost was it cost X dollars to grow, and I have been sharing in the growth for all these years. And now that we're at the numbers that we are seeing here, there's a question as to whether I want to continue to pay for that growth or not, or let the newer ones coming in share the have full control over those costs if they want to come here. But that is my take on the growth and the impact of growth and who should pay for those costs as we continue to grow in this town. I don't think we should just stop growing. This town is going to grow, and we should allow it to grow, but have some controls over growth. And I guarantee you that if you start having businesses and newcomers share pay for that cost, that in itself will control growth.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to share something that I have probably shared with you a number of times concerning connector roads. And I look at where we're contemplating putting connector roads even now. And even before we can get them financed, we find developments coming up along where we are proposing to put them, which necessitates additional connector roads. In other words, we build the connector road through Anderson Pond and then to connect Whiskey and Silver Bluff, and then we got all these houses coming up on it. We find we want to go to connect Whiskey and Powder House, and then you've got people wanting to put houses along that as well. And I think you get the idea that when people come to Aiken and newcomers come to Aiken and they buy a home on the south side where the traffic is a little heavier than on the other parts of town, that they may have looked at these houses in the middle of the night and not have seen the traffic before they got here. But they do see the traffic. And I think some of them are coming out of such large towns and cities that they don't mind it when they're buying the home. But when they come here and they hear others complain about it, because to some of us it is new traffic, then they too begin to complain. And so we think we have a problem. But I have to go to Augusta to the fabric shop, I think it's called Hancock, to pick something up last Saturday, and I saw someone from Aiken there, and I asked what was that going up just outside of Washington Road just before you get to the river, and it's a shopping center right there. And I think people go where they have to go. I don't think Augusta's trying to put any connector roads off of Whiskey Road, off of Washington Road, but it's getting more crowded, and it's still building, and people are still going there. People go where they need to go. And I think what I'm trying to say to you is that it doesn't matter how many connector roads we build until we put one in the sky where you can't put houses on the sides of them. You're going to always have traffic problems. Every time you build a connector road, you get more traffic on the road. You get more houses, more businesses, and we just can't build them fast enough. And I think we need to think about that. I'm not sure whether impact fees are going to solve the problem, because I think they just want to be there. And I think they'll continue to come. And we may as well face the fact, Mr. Mayor, that they're going to complain no matter how many connector roads we build.
Well, there's some people that consider traffic as a problem. I think we ought to look at traffic as an asset. They go into our stores. Stores are generating tax money, mm-hmm. and it's putting more money into the revenue stream. Now, when I go someplace, there are more than one way to go to Lowe's.
Right.
And there's more than one time during the day, normally, that a person can go. So if the traffic is bothering them at noon, then why can't they somehow adjust their schedule or go another direction? We talk about Powder House being unsafe. I don't talk about it because I don't think it is unsafe. I think it can be safer. And I've told folks my thoughts on that. But I've been on Powder House, so probably once every 2 weeks I'll go down that way. And I bet the most people I've ever seen was eight different vehicles while I'm on Powder House Road. Now, it's true, there are times when there are more than that. I know that. But my golly, we've got to expect there's not enough money in the world to build a road that there's never going to be any traffic and you can just go and not stop and that kind of thing. But on the average, if you average these things over a 24-hour day, the service level would be a lot different than what has been done now. If you looked at every hour during the day. And we've got five lanes of road down Whiskey Road, my goodness, including that center lane. And I just think people have to be, first of all, they've got to be more accountable. How many people do you see driving and talking on the phone at the same time and making a turn and what have you? And they have an accident, and what gets blamed for it? The road. Roads don't cause accidents. People cause accidents. They've got to be more accountable. Be more patient. Leave a little early. And they shouldn't have any problem. That's why I don't have any problem.
One other thing we need to consider is that you look at all the businesses that are there, and I wonder how many of them will be sustained if you didn't have all those cars coming and going to them, and then we'd have all of these buildings that would be closing up because nobody's going out there. They've been rerouted to the new ones that have been built on the connector roads. And that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, what I've said does not mean that I don't support. I do support some type of an impact fee at some level. I don't know what that is yet. That's something we have to talk about. But I do support it somewhat, you know. But I think, obviously, we've got to be visionary. And what we're talking about, really, and the things we're talking about are not going to happen tomorrow. They're not going to happen in 6 months. They're going to happen down the road when we do have more homes, and people are going to keep coming because people have the right to sell a property and to build certain things on it. So we certainly need to do something.
Let me just make a couple observations here. First of all, it takes about 3 to 5 years to build a new road. So even though we're talking about needing these roads somewhere in the future, the planning for that new road needs to take place very soon and can't do that unless you know where your funding's going to come from. I believe if I've asked each one of you, do you expect Aiken to grow? You'd all say, yes, we are going to grow. Unless you put a moratorium and say, there will be no more growth, we are going to grow. So that's a given. Now, we could sit and discuss for a long time, is it $35 million? For the new roads, or $30 million, or $40 million, and I could go ahead and agree with any number you want, but the fact of the matter is we need additional funding for that growth and for those roads that are going to be needed. The question comes into, and this is the philosophical discussion that you all are having, is who will pay for these roads? Because again, if we assume that we're going to have growth, and we soon are going to have these roads built. And now it comes down to who's going to pay for it. We have some money, as we said, in the once-on sales tax. We're trying to get some money from the federal government, and I think we'll be successful, but we're talking about millions of dollars, not tens of millions of dollars. And it then comes down to, do we pay for the new roadway improvements, 100% with growth, 50% with growth, 100% with the individuals that are currently living in Aiken, what's going to be the number that we have? To get this started, if council wants to move forward and to debate this issue, Gary and I had a long discussion on this morning. The state law says that you start with the planning commission, they talk about the improvements, they talk about the funding that's needed to move forward. Now, they've done this in 2003. And we could go ahead and say, they've already talked about this, it doesn't need to go before the Planning Commission. I personally would probably feel a little more comfortable after talking to Gary this morning that
if council wanted to move forward, we could pass a resolution at the next meeting saying we would like you to discuss this, but it's been 3 years. Numbers have changed. We've added some improvements to start that process, not totally over again, but say, okay, you've already implemented it and approved it. We just want you to re-ratify it and look at what we have and give us your opinion as to where we need to go.
In the next 60 days? Or 90 days? Yeah. Sometime it's got to have a vote. Yeah. Otherwise, we'll take another 2 or 3 years.
If you pass the resolution either at the next meeting or the following one, they could start looking at it in October and probably, I believe we said, have the public hearing in November. But it depends what council wants to do. We need to take some action forward as to how we're going to come up with the money. I'm here tonight just to present the numbers, to get you talking about it, to get you moving forward on it, and to determine what, if anything, you want to have an impact fee. If you want it 100%, it's that $984. If you want it 50%, just divide it by 2. That means that half the money is going to come from some other source, half the money from growth. If we had no more growth today, again, close the doors, no more growth, city or county, our roads could probably be fine. But again, we're talking 300 and some thousand new trips that are going to be generated 10 years from now. I mean, that's a lot of trips that we're talking about having to accommodate on our existing system, and it cannot accommodate.
I'm glad we get it back on the focus. We're really talking about the future.
Okay.
And I got to tread very carefully right here because I'm a big city boy. I've lived in Cairo, Egypt. You ain't seen nothing like what I've seen in traffic. And we got from place to place despite all that. I've also lived on Hilton Head, and I know what it is there. Yes, people complain, but objectively, using the traffic figures that we currently have, we really have very few spots in the city that are below the minimum standard level, except for an hour a day, perhaps.
And just a few intersections.
Just a few intersections. And so I'm going to say, I agree with you, I agree with the mayor today, but it's the future is what we've been talking about. That's what I was talking about in 2001, if you will, when we started talking about impact fees. Now, here we are 5 or 6 years later. We're getting closer to the future than we were then by a whole bunch. I made the point a few weeks back that right now we know that there are 4,000 new homes coming in the south side, not all in the city, but they're out there, coming along right now. And we've got to go ahead and really get realistic about what the future holds. And I think the only logical source, it would be wonderful if we get federal funding, but the chances of getting much out of the federal and the state, I think, are pretty slim. And we're going to have to do it ourselves, or we are going to be in the real traffic jams later.
I think that if you have 4,000 homes coming and they're not there yet, and we are going to put $35 million worth of roads in to accommodate homes that are coming in the future, when we have roads other places in the town that are not saturated, they're not on the south side, but they're not saturated. And it might be that that's the reason the homes are going in, is because they realize that we will continue to put more roads in. They're not going to buy land and develop where they don't think we will put the roads in. If we say we're not putting these roads in, I can assure you those homes will go somewhere else. I can assure you that every time we map out a route for a new road, more developments pop up. It makes business sense to do that. You get this nice big paved road in wide open spaces and things develop around them.
Probably the other reasons they're developing on the south side as well, because that's where people want to be. You put a nice brand new road up up north, east, west there where there's nothing now, and chances are you're not going to see that develop very fast. People want to be in the south. That's what we've seen, migrating to the south. I don't disagree with you that there are going to be more homes put on these roads.
What is our aim here? Is it to accommodate future residents or to make a good life for the residents that are currently here? I mean, do we want to have all the new people come in and pay for everything via impact fees? Is that going to be enough to take care of everything?
It would be if we set the figure right.
And I think we should think of, I'm much more interested in the impact fees that the first part of this study talked about. I mean, to me, that's, to think that we can make up that $25 million shortfall with an additional use up our 1% sales tax for that, I don't think that's a good thing to do. I think it makes more sense to people to see, as you were talking, that they're paying an impact fee for recreation, for police protection, for a variety of things. And they're not just, like you said, the only ones paying for a road when everybody's on the road. No, then the impact fee is obviously for services that will go to the individuals or the companies that pay the fee. And there's a lot more fairness in my mind when we think in that way. And I think of the 1% sales tax as not a means to make up what we don't collect. I think if we're going to levy it, it ought to be for very special things that come up.
I think you're right.
And not for the day-to-day operation of the city or whatever. But that's just my own opinion of it. But anyway.
That makes sense to me.
But I'm wondering, in the last 10 years, what new road have we built to facilitate growth? What new road has been built?
Rudy Mason Parkway.
Yeah, but Rudy Mason Parkway.
You know, since I've been here, and I've been here quite a while, I've seen the road come behind South Aiken that a lot of people are now starting to use. I've seen all kinds of other roads that have been improved to make traffic flow a lot better around them. And so we have improved on a number of roads. So we have done that. But let me just tell you that in 1992, I worked over at the high school over there. And I don't remember traffic being a big problem, but I remember when the company changed out at the plant. Was that in 92 or maybe 90?
91.
But when the majority of the people started coming in. 89.
Westinghouse took over. Mm-hmm. That's when the bulk of people started to come in. Mm-hmm. 92 was the time frame when we're beginning to lose those 11,000 jobs in the Cold War.
Well, I can just tell you that in 1988, when I went there, we had a population of about 1,100 at the school. And in 1992, before the district did its redistricting plan, we were approaching 1,400, 1,500. Now, we were downsizing, and yet the school population was growing. And that's because you did have development popping up over there. And the population shift was changing. And I just remember how those roads started to get a little bit more crowded over on the south side. And we did make improvements over there on Whiskey Road. And so we have done some improvement. We've improved the traffic signaling. We've
widened East Pine Lot.
Yeah, we've widened East Pine Lot. We've done some things over there. And I'm not to say that we don't need to do anything else. I'm just saying to you that not being an expert on development, just being practical, I just think that the reason people favor the South Side is because everything's there. It's this mini little city. And And yet, people will tell you that smarter cities do grow toward the interstate. And that's because the infrastructure, the roads are there, and traveling is a lot easier when you do that. We have not done that. We have chosen to do our development in an area that chokes itself off in this area, and so we need all these roads.
What's happening right now in Rudy Mason? What did we just approve?
Yeah.
I mean, it's beginning to go in that direction. We want it to go in that direction. That's the major expense that I think we've spent, where we've really actually created a road, and it's opened up a whole area. And that's making your argument in one way, that build it and they will come.
Well, you know, there's another scenario, too, I think you have to consider. It may not happen, but if you take that area, there's a big parcel of land in between Whiskey Road and Powder House that the gentleman right now wants to work with us on it as far as cutting it through to Powder House. If we didn't do anything, you think that land is going to sit there and not be developed? Either by him or some company coming in and buying that land and say, okay, we'll put our own road in here. We'll stay in the county, by the way, and we'll still generate traffic. And they can they may not be able to cut right through to Whiskey, but they might say, okay, let's go to Powder House. And we'll either go south or we'll go north on Powder House. And then we might come back out here to Pine Log and Whiskey, which is our largest concern as far as traffic as an intersection. And then we'll come on down Whiskey Road and get to the mall that way. So when you're analyzing it, I mean, I'm no expert either, but you've got to look at all these possibilities. And so what is better in the long run? Is it better for the city to take some initiative in the county and build a road through there, and then hopefully that land will be in the city, will come into the city? And true, it's going to be developed sooner or later anyway.
But you think he'll build a road then?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Why not? It depends on, or his family.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they're willing to build a road, you know, then they should do the development. But to...
Well, I don't know that they're willing to build it. I'm just supposing that would happen at some point in time.
If we are reacting to the people's complaints that they need more roads, that they need better roads over there, and you're saying they're going to build the houses anyway, and if they buy them anyway, it's kind of like when I was growing up and my parents used to tell me, if you make your bed hard, you need to lay in it. And I just think that when do we make some attempt to spread the growth and make downtown once again the center of town? Right now, it's not. We look at the south side as being the center of town because that's where everything's going.
I don't.
And
I think the center is downtown. It's where we come. It's where we go.
It may not be the physical center, but it is to me, too.
Yeah.
But Beverly, we're trying as hard as we can. You just can't. Some people that write in the paper think, why don't you just tell them they're going to be over there? Well, they're going to be over there. Well, yeah, wouldn't it be nice if we could do that? We're working as hard as we can with the Sams now to get them up north or east or northeast, northwest, somewhere up in that quadrant.
And in fact,
I think it's going to happen.
We did put a north side incentive in. I think we have that, don't we? Actually, and that will also help in this impact fee question.
I'm just trying to convince you of what I think here now is a very silly argument, and that is that, you know, they're building the developments over there because we're putting the roads over there, and it's not the other way around. They're building the developments over there because we're putting in the roads. We're putting in the roads, and so they're going to continue to build. If we put the roads in and put the infrastructure in other places, then I think that's where they'll go. I think they just want the infrastructure, and they'll go there.
Well, let's just say something. You know, all of us have different opinions on this thing. But if I was a golfer and I wanted to play golf five times a week or something, and I'd be looking at Woodside or I'd be looking at Chucker Creek, and I wouldn't be paying any attention at this point about traffic. I'd just say, man, I'm moving here from Houston or Atlanta. And there's no traffic here. So I'm going to go out there and I'm going to buy my lot wherever I am, whether there's a road or not. And I'll just use the existing road. But at some point in time, I might start fussing about it, too.
But, Mayor, you're making...
But that's not going to keep me from buying that house in Woodside or wherever. If that's my focus, if my focus is on playing golf or whatever it might be, I'm not going to worry about the traffic.
But that makes my point, and that is that if they're not going to worry about the traffic, then maybe we're too worried about the traffic and spending.
Well, Mary.
Well, I think there's certainly some truth in what you're saying.
What you have to listen to as well is individuals that have intentions of moving here. They're coming here looking around, and as they talk with realtors, where they target individuals and their interests, and the target is not on the north side in most cases. And I'm speaking from having spoken with some of the folks that have an interest and have already moved here. And it's because of the attraction that the South draws. So when you speak of telling someone to go here, there, it's whatever that real estate person targets in terms of showing what Aiken looks like.
Well, they must be pretty short-sighted if they don't, if they just take the lead of the real estate person. If I was a real estate person, I would say, well, what are your interests, you know? Or they would tell me what their interests are. Look, I'm coming to Aiken, I'm retiring to Aiken, I want to play golf, I want to play tennis, I want to bring my horses. So where are the best places for those kinds of activities? Where are they? South side? It just depends on the person, I think, coming in, whether he's going to listen to a real estate person, just go wherever they tell him to go, or are they going to come in? They've probably done some research, and they're looking for certain activities, whether it's a university or whatever it may be, and it seems like they're going to want to live wherever their means are and allow them to live.
Well, we're in a unique position, possibly not so unique as other growing municipalities face throughout the state and this country, with the decisions we make and how growth occurs. And I think we've already made some decisions that has facilitated some good growth. When I look back on city council, if you recall, in the 80s, we had problems, infrastructure problems with the north side, and we chose to invest on the south side and thought we'd get back to the north side to get these infrastructure things done. But things started growing so rapidly and so well on the south side that we invested more and more and more and thought we would eventually get to the north side, but that took a while for us to catch up. So
well, we did put in all the water lines all the way up to I-20. Mm-hmm. We made ways for infrastructure, that type of infrastructure, early on in the 80s when Mr. Windham and Mayor Weeks were here in the 80s, and I forget the dates.
Happened in the late 80s and 90s, as I recall, because I was just getting on council and recall that discussion with infrastructure.
Yeah, so it's not like we didn't make those possibilities, those utilities available at least somewhat, the main backbone, at least going up there. And you know, you may recall that back in the 80s, the late 80s, when we were on council, mm-hmm. 85, 87, Route 1 going up there had only been four-laned halfway.
Right.
And we had arts money over on 19 mm-hmm. to do something with that road. And we elected as a council to know, let's take that money and put it on Route 1 and finish the job that had been lingering for years and complete that four-laning all the way up to I-20. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So that took a lot of money right there and took the emphasis off of 19 because we took the money away at the time. But anyway.
Was this discussion about the possibility of implementing impact fees, Roger?
You're looking for some direction.
I'm looking for direction as to how do we pay for the $35 million worth of improvements that we need.
Yeah. Take it all out of your pay. I got one solution for you. Take about, I don't know this to be true, but mathematically, there's a limit to the number of numbers when you take six numbers. It's six numbers in the lottery. Invest the number of millions it takes to play all the numbers in the lottery and play that and get your $135 million and bill all your roads at one time.
That's one solution.
Roger, the consideration that I have is...
I think Steve may have something to say about the city playing the lottery, but I can be wrong on that.
I just think we're back to where we were before. And I mean, my thing is that, all right, let's do the impact fees for the new growth. And I would love that because I would be riding on those new roads, and so will a lot of other people would be riding on the new roads without contributing anything. And if we're going to have the developers pay, that's a little different from having the new residents pay.
Well, they're going to pass it on.
And I think that's the part that gets to me because I feel like sometimes we are subsidizing developers. Because we're building their roads.
Now, some of it's new roads, some of it's improving existing roads, so there's a combination. But again, so that you could plan for the future, we're presenting tonight a situation that we've talked about many, many times, and we just need to set a path forward as to what are we going to do before it becomes too late, and we have the problem. I mean, as has been stated over and over again, we may not like it, but the fact of the matter is there's 4,000 homes that have already been approved in and around the city just in one area. They're going to come sooner or later. The county has got 5,000 homes just north and west of the campus, UC Aiken. They're not even in the city, but those 5,000 homes are going to be coming on in here, and that's going to be adding traffic to this area. So we know the traffic's going to come. I really believe part of the solution is going to be we need to work with the county.
Yes,
but absolutely. Council also needs to probably decide how do we want to approach it. Do we want to approach it through part impact fee, part 1 cent sales tax, part federal, part county? Do we want to look at it all, trying to use impact fees? You know, how are we going to approach this? And if you can come up with a solution, if the county can come up with a solution, even though we don't have the money, then the staff could take the future projection of the money that we'll get in, and we could bond towards that. If we knew that we were going to get $1 million in a year for the next 10 years, that's $10 million. We'd go out, borrow some money, start doing the planning, start buying the right-of-way, do the engineering, and start getting some of these projects moving forward. But right now, we can't do anything because we've talked about the problem, but we haven't taken any action.
Roger, my preference would be that new growth be paid for by new businesses and newcomers coming in. as a compromise, 75% is where I lean in terms of the impact fee with new businesses and newcomers, and the 25% with those individuals that are here already. And then with looking at that, looking at federal dollars, county funds, those things in terms of how we can reduce that burden. All the other components that you're saying that we should look at in terms of federal dollars coming in, county, and so forth. And I don't know how we do the numbers, the 75-25.
But I think right now we're going to ask the Planning Commission to take a look at it first. Wouldn't
right.
And do an analysis, just dragging percentages out of the air. I don't think.
That's right. We need some more.
Well, I'm looking at some numbers that he gave us already, and based on my quick analysis, if he's looking for some answers, that's me.
And I'm not looking at a percentage, but what I believe I'm hearing is that we will probably need to consider some form of impact fee.
Yes.
Whether it's $100 per housing unit or $1,000 per housing unit, that's the question. And the other thing that I think is really critical, and this is where council could really help, for us to be talking to county council members, because we just can't do this alone.
No.
I mean, we can. I mean, if we have to, we need to do something. But again, I'm concerned about the fact that Sam's, again, that very real example, could take a look at, say, whether it's $500,000 or $100,000, it doesn't take a whole lot. If I have alternate site A versus alternate site B, mm-hmm. and B is nothing, and A says I'm going to have to pay $200,000 because of my traffic impact fee, I think I'm going to choose A.
I also wish we would talk to our county council members about not removing the county offices from the city of Aiken. I think that's a very bad idea. I think they have a lot of land over there behind that old hospital. They have $12 million in the 1% sales tax to spend fixing up that building, which has been allowed to really deteriorate in the last couple of years. I go in there frequently, and it really has not been cleaned up and not been painted up the way it should have been. And I really don't, as a citizen of the city of Aiken, a lot of people walk to that building. If it's out on the bypass, we can guarantee every single individual will drive to that building. And I think that other cities made the mistake 30 years ago of letting things peter out to the bypasses and found out now they're trying to get them back in. And I want us to have a nice county council building, but while we're all city of Aiken taxpayers, we are all county of Aiken taxpayers too. And I'm not willing to see, I don't think that building's going to cost $25 million. I think it'll end up costing $50 million or something like that. And then we will have lost that activity in the city of Aiken, which is one of the things that keeps this town active. And I just, while we're talking to our county councilman about working together, let's save our money. I mean, and keep our downtown really viable in every way we can.
If council is ready, what we could do is I'll ask Gary Smith to write a resolution asking, having council to approve it. I believe that's the way that the state law reads, is that council first passes a resolution asking that a study be made of a new impact fee. That way then it'll go formally from there to the Planning Commission. I'll give it to Ed. He can go ahead and try to get on one of the very near future. In other words, it's already been discussed and talked about. It's just updating it and allowing the public to have the opportunity to have a input, because it impacts a new homeowner. I think that's one consideration. That could be up to $1,000. That's a lot of money, but a new homeowner, that's not going to be real obvious to them. A new business, when you start talking about $50,000, $100,000, $200,000, that's a major impact and would maybe make a big difference whether or not that business decides to be here in Aiken or not. And so
But you have to do this across the board. You can't say, well, businesses, we'll give them a break, and houses, we'll do. You do something across the board, but that's where the reasonableness has to come in as to what is that fee going to be.
Yeah.
But I haven't had a chance to read this whole study, but I mean, it distinguishes between the impact of businesses, doesn't it, and the impact of
residents? It's based on the, and this was the question I believe the mayor had, was do you have to base this on a per trip basis? Obviously, a convenience store gets a whole lot of trips coming in and out to that convenience store, versus if it were a high-end retailer, you might only get a few dozen people coming in and out, and therefore they're not going to pay near as much as a convenience store. It's all based on trips. And so if we assume 10 trips per day for that residential house, that convenience store might be 1,000 trips per day.
Well, that's where I'd like to see it based on something besides trips per day, if we're going to
have. And that's where it becomes very good. If you don't do it on trips per day, then there's more of an opportunity to object to this in a court of law, because it's not based on something that's logical.
How did Somerville do it?
An engineer that goes to school and learns what traffic is all about, and he has to say, you know, using our engineering standards, this is the best way to figure out how to spread the impact out evenly.
But how did Somerville do that? Now, they used more than just traffic. They used other things. And Jasper County, I went to that meeting about Jasper County, and they used, you know, they spread the impact fee based on a lot of things, not just traffic.
But they weren't. But again, their impact fee was not just for traffic.
Right.
Their impact fee was for parks and police stations and fire trucks. And that's not based on traffic.
A business would not have as much of an impact on the Parks and Recreation
Correct.
Department as a residence would.
That's right.
And so in that instance, the residence is going to bear more of the brunt of the fee than the business will.
But there's a fairness there. It's what you're talking about. To me, I perceive that to be fair. If that's the brunt, you know.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, the traffic engineer, I think, would argue to you that two people living in the house aren't going to generate a lot of new trips, but a brand new Sam's or a brand new Walmart is going to generate a bunch of trips, and they're going to use the roadway a lot more.
But if we can't work with the county on this, we're just dead.
We talked about the county.
Yeah.
And yeah, Jane, everything we're trying to do is in the county. Think about that.
Right.
Even Doherty Road, I mean, that's a county road.
Right.
Everything we're talking about doing here road-wise is in the county. So I think they understand that, and the newspaper understands that too, and a lot of people understand that. So, and besides that, we've been working with them real well here in the last few years. I think we've got some real.
Their decisions can be very difficult though, because when they start looking at it, based on my understanding, the state law, and again, Gary and I debated this, and we don't have all the facts on it 100%. But I believe that if they decide to put an impact fee, that would have to apply to the entire county. They can't specifically say, we're going to put an impact fee on all the new development occurring within 5 miles of downtown Aiken. No, it's going to be if there's a house built in Wagner, or there's a house built in the city of Aiken. It would be the impact fee. Now, they could exempt the cities, but it would have to be the entire area. And you know that with the way their districting is in the county, 8 districts, it's going to be difficult for Kathy Rawls to accept a impact fee when she's looking at a very rural area.
So it's
a difficult area for them to look at. I know they're going to look at it, but again, it's just that it's one more area difficult.
Could they then use more easily the municipal improvement district as a way for them to go?
Absolutely they could. And again, the municipal impact district would be putting an impact just for that specific area that's going to impact traffic or whatever.
Think of a place where they really are.
Okay, are we know what we're going to do now?
We're going to send it.
Okay. Now, what's the resolution going to say? Let's talk about that a moment.
I mean, the resolution was
going to say consider this, but
the resolution was will direct the Planning Commission to update their review of what they did, I guess, 3 years ago, whenever it was, based on the new numbers supplied by the traffic engineer, and to issue a report to City Council. Right now I'm thinking by November the 30th, because the state law allows you to impose a deadline and it requires them to respond by that deadline. And then once you've gotten that report, then an ordinance would come before council for further consideration. And that's
what would have to go back to planning?
Planning will discuss this.
That would be there. Okay.
That's their direction. Their direction is to go back and look at this and issue a report to council with their recommendation about what the impact fee should be or whether there should be an impact fee and that kind of thing.
And their Planning Commission meeting is November 14th. Mm-hmm. You know, they typically would not have another Planning Commission meeting, so I'd say maybe November 15th.
Okay.
So we are not going to show them this study at all.
Again, it'd be like trying to compare apples with oranges, because one's dealing with transportation, the other one's dealing with something else. If you want to have an impact fee for parks and recreation and police stations and fire trucks and other things of that nature, that's a whole other subject that we'd have to do a much greater analysis on.
Than this.
Now, obviously, it's going to take the Planning Commission some time to make this analysis and give us
a public hearing and vote up or down and on whatever they're going to tell us or advise us. So we could be talking February, maybe.
Well, it depends what date you want to give them.
But I think it's also fair to say that based on this study that we got tonight, that transportation roadways are really our huge, biggest physical impact. We already have methods of taking care of most of the other
shortfalls. Oh, yeah, all right.
It's really a transportation impact fee is probably the best way to go.
And really, none of the roads that are in this, in the newest thing by Roger Dyer, I mean, none of these roads are brand new roads that we haven't talked about before. I mean, these are roads that have been in our capital improvement plan. So, I mean, as I view it, really what the Planning Commission would be doing is they would be looking at the new updated numbers. And they'd probably make a recommendation to you as to whether they thought new growth should pay for 50% of it or 75% of it or something along those lines. So, I mean, it shouldn't be something that would take them more than two meetings to deal with, I wouldn't think.
Well, 2 years last
time. Let's hope not. That's going to be a hot issue, let's face it. Okay, is that it? Okay, we're satisfied.
Yes,